searching podcasts for the Daily Perspective. Okay, the Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Hello, and welcome into this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity, hoping you are having a wonderful day. It is the Friday edition, the 22nd day of May, 2020. And yes, I was MIA yesterday. Life sometimes gets in the way. But we're back to wrap up the week. And as usual, more stories in the list than I can get to. We'll get to as much as we can. But before we start diving into the observation, insight, and absurdity, let's dig into just life itself, life yesterday. And the reason I wasn't here yesterday is because I it was personal stuff that just got in the way. I just couldn't make the time work the way I needed to make things happen yesterday. It all started with a lawnmower dying, and I had to take care of that situation. Excuse me. So my friend Mike, who works on small engines, just as a side thing, you know, he repairs, he actually does service on the lawn care equipment of a handful of lawn care companies. These guys who have trucks and crews that go out and do lawn care, whether it be residential or commercial. And when their equipment need service, they go to Mike, and Mike works on that stuff. And as a result of Mike and I being friends, longtime friends, every piece of outdoor equipment I have has come through Mike's hands, because at one point or another, a client will say, you know what, I'm just going to buy a new one instead of putting this money into repairing this old one. You just take that and sell it for your time, okay? And I'll go find another one. And so I have had Lawn Boy lawnmowers. I've got a big steel BR600 blower, backpack blower. I have a nice riding lawnmower, a Cub Cadet riding lawnmower. And the Cub Cadet riding lawnmower is the thing that is being repaired right now. And Mike has it. He had to come and bring me. He brought me another one. He brought me a Lawn Boy. Not a Lawn Boy. He brought me a John Deere to use while he's fixing my Cub Cadet. And the only time he could come was yesterday morning, right when I record the podcast, when I do the Facebook Live. And I honestly did think for a little while, okay, he'll be here sometime between 8 and 9. And since he is not, you know, one of these, he's not Best Buy, he's not Home Depot, he's not Lowe's, he's not any of these companies who are, who are going to tell you it'll be sometime between this time and that time, and then then it's getting dark and they finally show up. I won't be wasting a whole day. He'll be here when he says he'll be here. And he was. And I thought, okay, well, this is good. We got everything swapped out. He got mine loaded up and hauled off. And I thought, well, when he gets through with this, I'll go in and just reset my timers on my automation. And I won't bother to tell you how all that works, but I'll go ahead and set things up so I can just record the podcast at 9 o'clock instead of 8 o'clock. I'll get it done, produced, out the door, and that'll free the rest of my day up, and I'll have a podcast. And as we were standing out on the street in front of the house, and he was getting ready to go to his next stop, and he had a full day. He had all these different places he had to go. He was picking up equipment, dropping off equipment, working on other people's stuff. And so he had all these places that he was heading to. We were out there just kind of swapping stories and catching up. And my phone rang, and my mother, she's had a few things around her house that she's been wanting me to help her with, and I have been helping her with. And one of those things was a toilet that's been giving her some trouble. And she had been asking me for help. And I couldn't be there when she needed me to be there. And she called a plumber. This is a whole other story. This is not where I was going. And I just remembered. And she called the plumber. And this guy comes. He charges $78, this plumbing company. just to show up on your doorstep and to answer questions or whatever, it's $78. And so she says she's got this toilet that will not stop running. It's constantly running. And which is a simple fix. It's an $8 or $9 part from Home Depot and 5 minutes of work and you're done, right? But she also has another part in the tank of the toilet that I know has been broken in the past, and I have managed to super glue together and keep it going. And she's finally decided, well, that's the part that's bad. We got to replace it. So she talks to the plumber and he says, yeah, I can fix that. Hang on, let me get my rate sheet. And he goes and gets his rate sheet and he says, yeah, that's a small incidental. That's not all that big. It's going to be $300 and something. Over $300 to take the top off the toilet tank, to pull out one plastic part, to replace the plastic part, put the top on the tank and turn the water back on. $300. It's not going to take him 15 minutes. It's going to cost $300. And she said, you know, as long as you're here, let's look at something else. And she got him to fix something else that didn't cost hardly anything. And she called me. And that pretty much made for the rest of my day. So I went after I got cleaned up and went to her house. And as I park in the back, because she's got the street out front and she's also got an alley that runs behind her house, and that's where the garage is. And I usually park in front of the garage and walk into the back door because I'm family, you know, just walk in the back door. And as I round the corner to the back door on the sidewalk or on the concrete outside the back door, there's one of these Have a Heart pest traps. It's a cage that slams shut whenever something walks into it. Inside this trap is a raccoon. Yep. Rocket raccoon, minus the vest and all of the and the weaponry, but there's a raccoon. I looked down at the raccoon and said, "Well, there's something you don't see every day." And she opens the door for me, and I said, "Hey, I think I found what's been stealing your cat's food." apparently this little pest has been rambling around, and she and the neighbors have been trying to catch it. There are two of them, and she managed to snag one of them. And she had not only the toilet thing, so we were going to go get the part for that, and she needed to go to the bank, and she needed to go to, you know, look at some other things. So we just kind of made a day out of it. And part of that day was that raccoon in that cage on a tarp in the back of my car, and not in the trunk. I have an SUV, and it stunk. It smelled so bad. The longer it went, the more frightened the poor little thing was, frightened half to death, you know. And I just at one point it actually looked at me, and the look on its little face was like, I don't understand what's going on here. What's happening? What is going on? And you could just tell it was frightened. And I'm talking in a low tone of voice. I'm talking very calmly and very soothingly. It's okay, buddy. It's all right. And I leaned over just to whisper to the thing, it's going to be okay, buddy. And the thing is just right up in my grill, just teeth bared. Okay, wild animal. This is not a sitcom. This is a wild animal. This is something that's got to go and be in the wild. So to keep it from coming back to the house, we took it to a remote place and released it into the woods and let it go to fare for itself and to fend for itself. So that was part of the day yesterday. And if you follow the Daily Perspective podcast's Facebook page, you saw the photo I put up of this little guy when I had the cage standing on one end, getting ready to put it in the back of the car, because he was just an adorable little guy. He was just the cutest little critter. And I really felt sorry for him, and I really, really, really wanted him to be okay. And so I found a place where we could get way off of the main road, a traffic area, and released him. And he kind of backed out of the cage and looked up at me, and I rattled the cage a little bit to get him to realize he was free. And I rattled the cage, and he was like, oh. And he turned around and hightailed it off into the woods. Up it was, there was a hill, an embankment. He went running up through the trees and crested the hill. And I got back in the car, and we moved on. But that's why I posted the picture of the raccoon on Facebook yesterday. Because yesterday, I carried Rocket Raccoon around in my car for a little while. Of course, he didn't have the vest and the weaponry, as I said before. But anyway, that was part of the day. And just FYI, in case you're thinking about giving a raccoon a lift, you probably don't want to do that, because when they're frightened, they pee all over the place and it really stinks. So fortunately, we had a tarp down in the back, because we knew he was going to, you know, he was going to lose his cool, so to speak, all over the inside of the car. Anyway, after a little Febreze and some Lysol, the car is just fine. Everything is fine. The raccoon's fine. And it all is well with the world. And that's kind of how things went yesterday. What else? Yeah, there was this. One of the places we stopped. Okay, the back to the toilet story. The part we bought fixed part of the problem, but not the whole problem. So we had to go get another part. Fortunately, there is a Home Depot very near where Mom lives. So we ran over to this Home Depot, and she says to me as we're pulling in the parking lot, I really don't like this place. I'd rather go to Lowe's, but it's so far away. And it is. It's much, much farther away. And so we go into this Home Depot, and they stop us at the front door and ask, do you have your masks? And I've got one tucked in my pocket. I usually, because I just never know where I'm going to be. Inside the city limits of Birmingham, Alabama, if you go into many places, they require you to wear a face mask. So I have one. We managed to snag some N95 masks somewhere, and I don't remember exactly where. We got four of them, and I grabbed one on the way out the door and put it in my pocket. And so I grabbed mine, and my mom had said, she said, oh, I forgot mine. I left it at home. And they told her, well, just go to that table in there, so-and-so will make you one. And they had some, like, some paper towels and rubber bands and stuff where they could make you up a mask. And there was a guy standing at the table, and we walked up, and my mom looked at him and said, I forgot my mask. I need a mask. And he didn't say anything back to her. He had his hands into something, working on something, and he just kind of pointed at the rubber bands and at the paper towels and turned around and walked away. And we looked at each other like, and I'm looking for the person who directed us to the table, and she's gone. And this is, I don't know about you, but is this your typical experience with Home Depot? This has been my typical experience with Home Depot, is that if you need help, it's hard to find help. In Lowe's, they're all over you. Can I help you? You push a button and you hear the PA announcement, assistance needed in blah, blah department. And somebody shows up in a minute and they're helping you. But at Home Depot, you can go to the front desk and say, hey, I need somebody to help me back here with this. And you could spend the rest of the day waiting on help. It's just really, really strange. And this guy doesn't say a word. He just walks off. And so my mom reaches over, grabs one of the little paper towels out of the dispenser, and she just holds it over her mouth as we go search for her part. And by the way, don't wear an N95 mask. If you're thinking, well, that's the one I got to have. No. No, you don't. And I'll tell you why. That is because they are designed as real filters, not like the cloth masks or those little masks that you see people, you know, the little blue ones and the yellow ones that you see people wearing that are disposable. They're one-use masks. Those are designed just to keep, you know, to keep the majority of things from getting into your mouth and nose or coming out of your mouth and nose and hitting other people. The N95s really do filter at the level that will keep most things out. And if you're going to walk around for any length of a time wearing an N95 mask, you're going to find yourself pulling it off to be able to breathe from time to time. They are that restrictive. So if you're going to have to carry a mask around, I suggest that you get a cloth one, that you get something that's simple. You find some. Amazon has disposable masks now. So go look on Amazon.com. We bought a box of them. You can get like 50 of them for, I think they're 78 cents a piece. And that's good enough. Those do the job as long as you have to. And see, I don't wear masks everywhere. I'm not like these people that drive around with them on in their car. Hello, you're in your car. You're alone. You don't have to wear the mask. You just don't. In fact, you really don't have to most any place. But there are places that require you to, and if you have to, then find you a way to do it that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, and don't go for the N95 mask, because they're really hard to breathe through. And that was pretty much the day yesterday. When I got through there, I came home, I got in front of the computer and worked on some stuff, and then Jane came home, and she had other things she wanted to do, so it was back out again. We were back out in it again, yes, late yesterday. We found a place to grab a bite to eat, because, you know, our refrigerator's dead, and we don't have much in the house right now. And just for the record, I never thought I'd say this. I've had enough Mexican food to do me for quite a while now. That seems to be the only places I can find open. Yeah, can I get some more salsa, please? You are listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Thank you so much for coming along for the ride. Please keep your hands, feet, arms, and legs, and your small children and pets inside the ride vehicle at all times. It is the 22nd day of May, 2020, and there's a lot to be talking about. And as usual, during the breaks, I scan social media, and I ran across I haven't even looked at the story yet, but I thought, yeah, that's about right, from PJ Media, the morning briefing. Does anyone really believe the polls showing Biden cruising to victory? Do you? I think it's a good question. Do you believe the polls? I do not. And the reason being, as I've told you many times, I'm not the first person to tell you this. In fact, Rush Limbaugh says it. Many people say it. And that is that polls do not reflect reality. They do not reflect public opinion. Polls are used to mold and shape public opinion, to sway public opinion. Polls do not necessarily actually reflect public opinion. And the reason is that people tend to be such social animals that we figured, well, if this many people think this is right, it must be right. If this is how many people see this, then maybe I should follow along. And you should never do that. Never. Don't follow the crowd. How many times did your folks tell you that when you were a kid? Hey, don't go along with the crowd. They're stupid. Those people are crazy. Look how much trouble they get in. Look at, they're always broke. They got this problem. They're out of gas. Their cars are broken down. Their clothes are wrecked. Don't follow those people. They don't know what they're doing. And they're right. So don't follow the polls. Remember, in 2016, all of the polls said Hillary Clinton was going to be our president. All of them. All of the polls said everyone was going to vote for Hillary Clinton. All of the polls said she was going to win. Everybody was living and breathing by the content of those polls. And the polls were wrong. So when you see all of the stuff about Joe Biden being so many points ahead, how on earth can this man be this many points ahead? How could it possibly be true? You have to ask yourself that. And the answer to that is, it's not. It's pretty simple. It's not. Because the polls don't reflect reality. I saw something yesterday. A friend of mine, a liberal friend of mine, posted on social media. It was an NPR poll, NPR Marist poll. I think it was I know NPR was associated with it. And the majority of the people polled thought that all of these people who want to be set free from their home confinement and to get their lives back again, that those people are in the vast minority and that the majority of people don't see things that way. I challenge you to go to a Lowe's or a Home Depot or a Target or a Walmart and tell me those people want to be home. They don't want to be home. They want to be out. And they will go through ridiculous measures to ridiculous lengths, as in wearing masks and gloves and the like, just to get out of the house and go shop for flowers. that they can plant in their yards. People are tired of the lockdown, and they're seeing that the lockdown probably wasn't necessary. So, no, the polls are wrong. And so are the opinions of all of these weirdo talk show hosts. These guys on late night TV. Yeah, I said weirdos. These guys on late night TV, they've got it all wrong, and they reflect a tiny bubble. They're inside this little informational bubble, and they think everybody sees things the same way. But they don't live in the real world. They just don't. They live in their cushy homes. They've got lots of money, and they think everybody sees things the same way they do. We don't. We're ready to get out there and get after it again. As I said before, we're Americans. We're the people who blazed the trail to the moon. We're the people who have invented technology and medicines, which have kept millions and millions of people alive around the world. We are the people who landed on the east coast of this continent and blazed a trail across the nation because we had to find out what was around the next bend in the river and over the next hill. That's who we are. We are not people who cower inside their homes because we're afraid of germs. We're just not. When we see the evidence is on our side, when we see the evidence proves that the experts are wrong, we move along. We're ready to move along. We don't want lockdowns. And neither does the president. We'll look at that coming up in a couple of minutes. And speaking of talk shows, The View is one of those talk shows with those toxic opinions from those toxic women who are motivated by their smug self-righteousness, which is actually just hate. It's just hatred is what it is. Everything that motivates them is hatred for one person. For one person they used to love until he ran against Hillary Clinton. Well, President Trump's re-election campaign is venturing into daytime women's talk show territory now. They've just unveiled a weekly web program which is going up against ABC's show The View. This show, The View, that is, created by Barbara Walters, has run on ABC since 1997. It's been notably hostile towards conservatives, more so in recent years. But for people turned off by the leftward slant of The View, the Trump campaign is now offering an alternative. It's called The Right View. It airs Wednesdays at 8 p.m. The show features Laura Trump, Kimberly Guilfoyle, Katrina Pearson, and Mercedes Schlapp from the Trump campaign. They discuss issues important to conservatives in a traditional talk show format similar to that of The View. Laura Trump teased the first episode Wednesday on Twitter. She posted a video of her walking into the set and her set, and it said, "Join us tonight at 8 p.m. for The Right View, only on Team Trump Online, and there's a place you could RSVP. If you've ever felt like the talk shows out there don't represent your thoughts and views, come on over. The water's warm. We'll take the haters, too," she also said. Schlapp told Just the News, "For too long, women on ABC's The View have believed they represent all women's views. They project the fake news narrative to viewers across the country and are obsessed with their blatant hatred of President Trump. On the new series, our new series, The Right View, will make talk shows great again by breaking through the mainstream media's deception and providing the facts about President Trump's clear record of accomplishment." The Right View streamed its first episode Wednesday night on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, and was also shared by the president in a number of Trump campaign pages and surrogates. Wednesday's episode of The Right View also fired a shot across the bow of the ABC talk show by opening with images of The View co-hosts Whoopi Goldberg, Meghan McCain, Sonny Hostin, and Joy Behar in an overlay that said, "Make talk shows great again." The stream shared by Trump on Facebook alone had over a million views as of Thursday morning. That's just one of the avenues had over a million views. For comparison, though, The View on ABC does average about 2.6 million total daily viewers. That was just in March, according to Nielsen. The new web show comes as the Trump campaign continues to expand its already dominant online presence ahead of the November election. The campaign has launched a number of web shows in recent months, and campaign surrogates and supporters turn out ads, memes, and other content that go viral daily. Former Vice President Joe Biden, meanwhile, continues to struggle to give his campaign a solid online footing from his basement. Virtual events held by the presumptive Democrat nominee are often marred with technical difficulties, including audio issues, video issues, and bloopers during live broadcasts, as the 2020 campaign has moved mostly online during the coronavirus pandemic. And this goes back to what I was saying a little bit earlier about how can that guy be ahead, really, honestly, ahead with the American people? He's hiding in his basement. He's doing all of these interviews and online events from his basement. He's stumbling his way through everything. He can't remember his talking points. He's having to consult with his notes on a regular basis. He stumbles through interviews. He's done some crazy things and they've had crazy technical problems. And I just don't understand how right-thinking people could possibly think that guy's ahead. But then again, back to the right view. If you're interested, it's on Wednesdays. It'll be on Facebook, YouTube, and I believe it was Twitter. And just go search for it. Check it out. It should be interesting to have these women who are actually on the inside and know what's really going on to have their views on things to help you get things straight. Let's see here. I've got a story about hang on here. What did you? My computer's doing weird things. Up next, we'll look at what happens if there's a second wave of the virus. And what President Trump has said, what he said yesterday about what will happen here in the United States if there is a second wave. That comes up after the break. Plus, New York small businesses are desperate. They're trying to save their livelihoods. We'll take a look at that and more when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast for this Friday, the 22nd day of May, 2020. I was telling you a while ago about being out yesterday with my mom, going to Home Depot, and being required to wear a face covering, a mask. And I think it's interesting that there are so many people who are motivated by fear in this country. And we just inclusively, are allowing a progressive press and progressive politicians, that we're allowing these progressive people to frighten us into submission. Well, President Trump yesterday said the U.S. is not going to be shutting down again if there's another COVID-19 wave. He said, people say that's a very distinct possibility. It's standard. And we're going to put out the fires. He said this as he told reporters this while he was touring a Ford manufacturing plant in Michigan, where, by the way, they said, well, you're not getting in our state if you won't wear a mask. I don't think they stopped him. He was asked about whether he's concerned about a second wave of the virus, but Trump added a caveat saying, we're not going to close the country. We're going to put out the fires. Trump expressed confidence in the United States being able to contain future CCP, Chinese Communist Party, virus outbreaks. He said, whether it's an ember or a flame, we're going to put it out, but we're not closing our country. Currently, data shows that more than 90,000 people in the United States have died from the virus so far. Starting in March, a number of governors have imposed strict lockdowns, leading to layoffs and business closures. Trump made the remarks while touring the Ford plant, which is currently making ventilators in response to the pandemics, that is. But over the past month or so, all 50 states have started some level of reopening, including New York, the state with the most COVID-19 deaths. The number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits in the 2 months since the coronavirus took hold in the United States has swelled to nearly 39 million, according to the government report issued yesterday. Even as states from coast to coast gradually reopen their economies to let people go back to work, more than 2.4 million filed for unemployment last week in the latest wave of layoffs from businesses being shut down. And that's brought the economy to its knees, according to the Labor Department. That brings the running total to a staggering 38.6 million, a job market collapse unprecedented in its speed. The number of weekly applications has slowed for 7 straight weeks, though. Yet the figures remain breathtakingly high, 10 times higher than normal before the crisis struck. And the continuing rise shows that even though all states have begun reopening over the past 3 weeks, employment has yet to snap back, and the outbreak is still damaging businesses and destroying jobs. And this is a central issue. Our economy is suffering as a result of the lockdown. And many people who are observers of how things work and how things play out in our society are saying the lockdown really wasn't necessary. We have other examples, Sweden, for instance, where they took a different approach and had roughly the same results. So lockdown or no lockdown, the results would have been about the same. And so the president, I believe, is correct in saying, we'll put out the fires, but we're not locking the country down. And there have been so many people who have called for him to do things on a national level. There should be nationwide testing. There should be nationwide contact tracing. There should be nationwide measures of many kinds, which they're not authorized by our Constitution. And there are so many people, leftists, people in the entertainment industry, the ladies of The View, for an example, like we were talking about before, these people say that, and Joe Biden, I saw one of his ads. He's talking about how the president has failed in this. Well, the president has done what the president can do, given the overarching law he has to work by. It's called the Constitution. He can't. He's not a king. Remember Obama saying that? I'm not a king. I can't just, you know, with a stroke of a pen, accomplish what I want. And then he turned around and did exactly that same thing with immigration. President Trump knows he's not a king. He can't just issue an edict and have all of the people just obey. We don't have a monarchy here. He is a representative of the majority of America who wanted things to be done a certain way. So, our Constitution prevents him from doing things on a national scale. This is stuff I've gone into detail before. I'm not going to go into detail now. But he says we're not going to lock things down again. And I say, good for you. Good for you, sir. It's good that you stood up. It's good that you said this. It's good that you did this. And I understand that the president has had to do some things, because he was presented by the experts, I'm air quoting, maybe I should do this, experts, that certain things would happen. 2.2 million people could die if we didn't do the things that were done. 2.2 million, million people. And so because the experts said that so many people could possibly die, our president said, okay, let's do what we can to keep that from happening. And that's when we got to know Dr. Fauci. And the more we learn about Dr. Fauci, and the more we examine his track record, the more we see we shouldn't have been listening to him. I encourage you today. I did this was last night. I pulled up YouTube and showed my wife a video by Steven Crowder. And if you haven't seen this video, I encourage you to go look up Steven Crowder on YouTube, Louder with Crowder, and look for the video about how all the experts got it wrong. And he talks fast. That's just because that's the way he talks. He's a rapid fire kind of guy. But he spells out instance after instance after instance, example after example after example, about how the experts got it wrong again and again and again. And so the experts were telling us what needed to be done, and they were wrong. And when you look at their backgrounds, you look at some of them and realize they've never been right. We shouldn't be listening to these people. And as a result, we've had lockdowns in state after state after state. And in blue states, the lockdowns have been especially bad. the results of the lockdowns have been bad. But also in those blue states, they were in serious financial trouble before coronavirus hit. And now they're trying to blame coronavirus for all of their mismanagement, the end result of their mismanagement. In New York, for example, there seems to be no end in sight to restrictions that were brought on in due to the novel coronavirus pandemic. Small business owners in New York have demanded a change, or they'll be forced to close their doors for good. Reopen New York, a coalition of hundreds of small businesses, held a press conference Wednesday in a park that overlooks the Statue of Liberty in Lower Manhattan. Reopen New York say the conference was their last desperate cry to save their businesses. Simchet Minkowitz, she's the founder of Reopen New York, said, "The whole idea of this press conference was just to show that we're pleading and that we cannot hold on any longer. Stores are dying every day. Just yesterday, I heard that three small businesses within my own community are closed. That's three families." On March 22nd, Cuomo signed New York Pause, an executive order which mandated that all businesses deemed to be non-essential must shut their doors. It did not specify how long the order would be in effect. Shortly after the restrictions rolled in, Crane's prediction that New York's small businesses, who have been suffering for years under heavy regulations, faced an impending and unprecedented crisis. New York has offered some public assistance, but Reopen New York says they don't want handouts, they want to work. Over 2.5 months after closing, business owners can't put food on the table for their families. Minkowitz says people's livelihoods are crumbling. She also says that recently she put her heart and soul into opening a new store called Amor Fine Jewelry. Now that business is in the red. She took out big loans to get things started. As all small business owners and entrepreneurs will, they'll go and get small business loans and get things started and then funnel as much of the profits as they can into paying those loans off as quickly as possible. So she's incurred a lot of debt, hoping to get a business on the roll, and look what happens. She says it's very important that people know that you're right. Jewelry is not essential, but it is essential to me because this is what feeds our family. She founded Reopen New York after a middle-aged man called her husband crying that his checks were bouncing and that he couldn't pay his bills. After losing sleep over this story, as well as countless others she'd heard, Minkowitz decided that something had to change. She says, "So I made a video. The video went viral. Next thing she knew, 200 small businesses signed onto her group immediately." Bruce Backman, he's the press person for Reopen New York, says, "You'll see stores closing all the time every day. I hear about more and more stores that are just calling it quits." With an understanding of this dire public health crisis, Reopen New York says that it can serve its patrons and open their stores safely by introducing reasonable measures to protect public health, such as wearing gloves, using sanitizing agents, and limiting the numbers of patrons and customers that they allow into their stores. They point out that small businesses are far more capable of limiting the foot traffic than big box stores like Walmart, Target, and Costco. Backman says, "We have essentially created a society now where we're pushing everybody to go to like three stores, and those stores have many more people in them. They're much more dangerous insofar as spread would be concerned. I've been to those stores. They're packed with people. Smaller stores are much more able to limit the capacity of clients." Business owners in New York are holding out hope that things will change the next day, Backman says. At first, the businesses were compliant and understood the need to lower the apex, which was expected to hit New York around mid-April. But as May rolled around and no changes were made, the coalition realized it needed to take a stand. They demand that by the end of May, all businesses must be allowed to open. Backman says, "Everybody locked down. I didn't complain for a second to close my business. I didn't complain when I didn't, and I didn't yell at anybody. I was disappointed. I was sad. I was depressed, but I didn't blame anybody. I understood what it was that had to be done. But at some point, we have to go back to our lives. We cannot do this indefinitely. We cannot live like this. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not American. It's not constitutional." And that is the core of everything. what these state and city governments are doing to the people is unconstitutional and thus illegal. As I've said here before, we're a nation which is accustomed to risk, and we're willing to take it when the results, the possible results, are great reward. We're not children. We don't need the progressive elite to look out for us. And we're back. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. It's the Friday edition, weekend ahead of us. Reminder, no podcast Monday. Going to be taking that day off. And I know how this kind of stuff goes. I'm thinking, and somehow it won't be. I will be so busy Monday. Things will happen. Things that I've been putting off will all come to a head, and I'll have to take care of so many things Monday. Anyway, no podcast Monday. Things resume to abnormal on Tuesday. Well, I don't know if you caught this, but Sunday, Senator Bernie Sanders said that reevaluating how the U.S. government and society function could be the silver lining to the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, to tell you the truth, that if there is any silver lining in the midst of this terrible, terrible and unprecedented moment in American history, in terms of the economy and in terms of the pandemic, it is that maybe we start rethinking some fundamental tenets about the way our government and society work. He said this during an interview with ABC's This Week. Now remember, Sanders championed Medicare for All during his 2016 and 2020 presidential runs. He says Americans should ask themselves whether health care is a human right or a benefit that could be lost during unemployment. It's a benefit. It's a product and or service. It's part of your personal responsibility to care for your own health. The Democratic Socialist Senator has argued that Medicare for All would help combat the coronavirus, previously saying the United States is at a severe disadvantage because, unlike every other major country on Earth, liar, we do not guarantee health care as a human right. Sanders is not the only progressive to view the pandemic as an opportunity for political reform. Joe Biden said every great change that has taken place has come out of a crisis. And I think we have an opportunity now to significantly change the mindset of the American people, things they weren't ready to do. You see where this is going? In March, House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, the Democrat from South Carolina, said the pandemic provided Democrats a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision, he says. California Governor Gavin Newsom has said the coronavirus could reshape the way we do business and how we govern. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a vocal proponent of Sanders' Medicare for All proposal, said she was thankful in April that the pandemic demonstrates the fragility of our system. And last week, House Democrats unveiled a $3 trillion coronavirus relief bill that includes a series of left-wing policies, including provisions for environmental justice grants and banking regulations for minority-owned and women-owned pot businesses. So, the progressives do want to take advantage of the situation in order to push progressivism. Well, people who are awake, thinking, honest people, have realized that the pandemic is showing us why socialism always fails. It's not the answer, it's failure. And Chad Savage over at the Epoch Times wrote a commentary, and I want to share that with you. It says, in the midst of the coronavirus crisis that has ushered more control into the government's hands at the expense of individual decision-making, we're learning why socialism has failed and always will. Apologists for socialism and communism claim that real socialism has never been tried. That is, the failures of the Soviet Union, Cuba, Venezuela, and others were due to bad leadership instead of bad political philosophy. But an egalitarian society where leaders and elites resist enriching themselves at the expense of others is impossible. And the actions of our elites during this pandemic prove that point. As COVID-19 has temporarily stripped Americans of many of our cherished liberties, giving us a temporary taste of socialism's sour fruit, we're learning how elites would behave if these restrictions became permanent. Many who have championed the quarantine are flagrantly violating it. Two elites infected by COVID-19, George Stephanopoulos and Chris Cuomo, flouted rules that the rest of us are supposed to follow. Stephanopoulos went on a maskless walk, breaking his required self-isolation. Cuomo, instead of being quarantined in his basement, as he claimed on CNN, traveled to inspect his second home, which was under construction. He even got into a confrontation with a passing bicyclist while he was sick, and he was supposed to be, as he told everyone on CNN, shut up in quarantine in his basement. Former President Barack Obama has likewise violated the quarantine order. He was seen golfing the day after his wife recorded a public service announcement imploring African Americans to stay home. Even worse is the case of Professor Neil Ferguson, whose bleak forecast of millions of COVID-19 deaths led to crippling economic measures and massive shelter-in-place orders. After becoming infected with the virus, Professor Neil Ferguson violated his own shelter recommendation to have sex with his married mistress. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot is another elite who is above her orders for other people. She omitted herself from a prohibition on haircuts. Compare this selfish approach with what's happening to non-elites like salon owner Shelley Luther. Deprived of her ability to make a living, she was jailed for cutting hair in order to feed her kids. Unlike Luther, many elites are using their entitled status to circumvent the shelter orders. These are the very same people, social, political, and scientific elites, who would likely lead a socialist United States. Their actions embody an elitist sentiment. And that is, what's good enough for thee is not good enough for me. While these individuals are certainly hypocrites, the bigger point is that this sort of behavior is natural to humanity. Socialism relies on an unrealistic, rosy view of human motivation, epitomized by a famous Marxist saying. And that is, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. These words suggest that self-sacrifice and self-deprecation, integral to the success of Marxism's redistributive policies, which have been tried and proven not to work, are the heart of human nature. But as we've seen time and time again, proximity to power spurs self-seeking and self-affirming behavior. That's why those in power excuse themselves from hardship when desperate situations call for deep sacrifices. Before you conclude that this behavior is particular to our current pandemic, consider the excess demonstrated in 2018 by Nicolas Maduro, Venezuela's socialist leader. He gorged on an expensive dinner prepared by celebrity chef Nusret Goki, while his fellow Venezuelans were starving. Some were even desperate enough to eat cats and dogs. Similarly, his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, profited off the backs of the people he claimed to help, amassing a net worth of $1 billion. And it's not just Venezuela. Former President Mikhail Gorbachev enjoyed similar extravagance while supposedly existing in an egalitarian society. Gorbachev lived in a luxurious $15 million apartment while his citizens suffered in squalor. The tendency to abuse power is so basic to humanity that more than 3,000 years ago, the prophet Samuel warned Israel about the dangers of seeking a king. Samuel warned that a king would conscript their sons, force their daughters to work, tax their crops, and give their possessions to his friends. This warning still rings true today. Sadly, our elites have demonstrated this timeless human tendency repeatedly during the coronavirus crisis. We should heed the wise words of Samuel from antiquity and realize that what the pandemic is confirming today. When tasked with distributing the limited resources of a socialist state, leaders and elites will invariably funnel others' wealth to themselves. Socialist theory ignores power's corrupting influence, turning the dream of a communal utopia into a living nightmare. That's why socialism has always failed, and always will. The editorial brings up some good points, some excellent points. So thanks to Chad Savage over at the Epoch Times for reminding us that the progressive elite don't see themselves on the same level as you and I. I've told you this so many times, and that is that these people honestly, sincerely, passionately believe that they are both intellectually and morally superior. And as such, they deserve whatever they can get by being a member of the elite. We've seen the examples again and again around the world. Socialism enriches the establishment and makes the people poor. It does everywhere it's tried. In Venezuela, they pitch socialism as a way to equally and fairly distribute the wealth of the oil industry to the people. And what happened? A select few people got fabulously wealthy, and the rest of the people starved. And now when they protest, they look down the barrels of government guns. And the same thing would happen here in America. Just look at the mayors and the governors of the blue states, the Democrat states. Their unreasonable rules, and the fact that they themselves aren't abiding by those rules. Just do some digging. You'll see it's happening everywhere. And that's it for this week. God bless you. Have a good weekend. We'll be back Tuesday for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?